The Persistent and Nasty podcast is a series of interviews and informal discussions with inspiring women and other marginalised voices in theatre, film and beyond. From actors to activists, we aim to amplify these voices and invite the world to stay nasty. Hello, you gorgeous lot, and welcome to another episode of the Persistent and Nasty podcast. Elaine here, how are you all doing? I hope that you are looking after yourself, being kind to yourself and each other. Today, Louise and I chat with Jen Smith, the interim inaugural CEO of CISA, which is the Creative Industries Independent Standards Authority. All details for what CISA is doing and the work that they're doing are in the show notes of today's episode. This is a really important chat, especially in light of everything that has happened over the last few weeks, in particular with the Harvey Weinstein appeals and certainly with Kevin Spacey being back in the news, something that is really important for all of us to be aware of. And I think how all of this plays out is going to be really vital in how we move forward. So as I say, all the details for CISA are in the show notes of today's episode. If you enjoy the podcast and support the work that Persistent and Nasty do, then you can help us, and there are many ways to do that. One of them is financial, and you can become a Persistent pal or a Nasty hero, and the links to do that are in the show notes of today's episode. This really makes a huge difference to us, having that monthly income coming from our incredible community. And to those of you who already give every month, you have no idea how grateful we are. You keep the website going, you keep the coffee mornings running, so thank you. You can also just give us a one-off payment for the price of a cup of tea or coffee at any point. And again, the link for that is in the show notes of today's episode. Or you can help us out by commenting on the podcast, reviewing the podcast, sharing, downloading. As I always say, it helps the algorithm. And share any of our stuff on social media. Retweet. Are we still saying retweet? I think we are still saying retweet. Share on your stories on Instagram or whatever version of social media that you use. We are extremely grateful to all of you for all of your continued support. Talking of social media, you can follow us on Twitter at Persistent Nasty, Instagram at Persistent and Nasty, Facebook Persistent and Nasty, the website www.persistentandnasty.co.uk, where you can check out all the dates for the coffee mornings that are coming up, and you can also send us in blog ideas as well. And you can also send us a little email to persistentandnasty@gmail.com. Oh, for today's episode, it's a spicy one, so I don't know, maybe a Bloody Mary, maybe a ginger beer, maybe a chai latte, or you know, you can always just have a good old cup of tea. Sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Welcome to the Persistent and Nasty podcast.
Hi.
It's a delight to have you here, Jen. Thank you for coming and chatting to us.
I'm so pleased to be here, and our shared aims in making the workplace safer makes it a real privilege to chat to you both.
Thanks. Lou and I are probably going to start crying already. Yeah.
We do tend to cry. Yeah. For a variety of reasons.
Yeah, exactly. Jen, what we usually do is we ask our guests to give us a little potted history of your career up to this point. And then the foundation of CISA, I guess, would be a good place for us to get to. And then we can chat.
Sure. I mean, it's quite interesting because I was asked this question recently when I was speaking to all of the staff at BAFTA, you know, where's your career history? How did you get to this point? And I worked in Parliament actually about 25 years ago, and I was just reflecting on that. At that time I worked in Parliament, there were more MPs called John than there were women, and there was no formal opportunity to report issues of concern about behaviours, and there is now, and you can see how that is much needed in that place. So that was a very interesting and informative time. Then I worked in a sector in building and construction where, you know, there were rules on behaviours, there was a good workplace culture, and I really enjoyed, you know, working there. I moved to the BFI to set up their inclusion department, and what was so interesting to me was the contrast and the complexity of a freelance working environment. You know, the vulnerabilities that there are for freelancers. You can be sacked on a week's notice with no notice given. You know, the lack of accountability, that void of where you go if you have an issue. And if you think about organizations like ACAS, so much of their guidance says refer to an HR department, and so much of our workforce just doesn't have that. So whilst I was working at the BFI, the allegations and subsequent criminal convictions came to light about Harvey Weinstein, and that was a watershed moment. That really shone a light and put the floodlights on the scale and the seriousness of what was happening to people. And from that moment on, you know, I became more and more deeply engaged in the issues. I trained with ACAS to become a mediator. I, you know, wrote the first set of guidance and principles, which became contractual for over 50 cultural institutions to put some guidance about how you behave and conduct yourselves in these roles. You know, it was a really important leveler, I think, but not enough, which then led me to CISA to work for the great and formidable Dame Heather Abatz, who for many years standing has made so many fundamental positive changes to societal positives. And Dame Heather came together with our legal advisors at Field Fisher and recognised after subsequent numbers of allegations kept coming to light that those contractual clauses were just not enough, that an independent body where you could report behaviours of concern, seek advice, get services like dispute resolution, like mediation, was really, really necessary. So what happens now is that you have this complete void of accountability. People either go to multiple places to report concerns, or there is no place to go. And that's what we're seeking to achieve with CISA, and we're on our way.
So exciting.
It's very exciting.
I think one of the things that would be great for the listeners to kind of understand is, like you talked about Harvey Weinstein in that moment and that shift and the independent authority basically to actually investigate moments of harassment, and because that's one of the things that you, it's not just certain types of harassment, right? It's all discriminatory harassment that you're going to be.
So the purpose of CISA is really clear. So it's to prevent and tackle bullying and harassment, and bullying and harassment of a discriminatory nature. So, you know, we're really pleased over the last 18 months that I've been leading this work. You know, we've had 80 major cultural institutions and growing saying that they back us, that they want us to provide these services, that they recognise that the big have to look after the small, that we are an ecosystem of freelancers. The people that make the film, TV, music and theatre that we all love deserve to be safe at work. That is a fundamental baseline, you know. And I think the public interest when these issues hit the news is also important. People care not just about the content itself, but how that content is made. That's not going to go away. You know, the Misogyny in Music Inquiry recently lifted the lid on the issues within the music sector. I gave evidence to that select committee inquiry twice. And, you know, we are substantially backed by the work of that committee, that we are a necessary intervention, that this void in accountability needs to be addressed. And we are not going to miss this opportunity as creative leaders in the sector to be the generation that perpetuates harm for our workforce when it's so preventable. You know, the only thing now that stands between CISA as a concept and reality is money. We're going out for a funded ask. It's based on a, you know, less than 0.1% of UK turnover to protect everybody that makes the wonderful work that we all enjoy. And we're doing this work, Dame Heather, myself and my colleagues, because we love the creative industries and everybody deserves to be safe. That's the basic premise, prevention from harm.
It's so important because I think it's so funny. We talk about the creative industries with such passion, and it's a place for free speech. It's a place to tackle difficult ideas. And I think the creative industries like to laud themselves as being very progressive and being very inclusive. But I think we do see failure from our institutions and our major organisations. And I suppose I'd love to hear from your perspective, Jen, about how I think conversations with organisations look slightly different than ones with freelancers and artists
on
the ground.
Yeah. So, you know, again, going back to our design principles, the big look after the small. Yeah. So I think the majority of people using CISA will be freelancers. We've made it free for point of use for individuals. That's a really important principle of our design. But we recognise that, you know, it's frightening when you're in that position of power imbalance, when you feel on your own, that no advice potentially is available to you in the immediate purview, where there are gaps in provision. So, for example, you just might want to have some dispute resolution to get ahead of an issue that spirals out. Where do you go for that now? It's not available to you. So I think that, you know, CISA is for to create assurance for the whole of the sector. We need to be funded by the larger cultural institutions, but essentially the people that will use us will be freelancers and smaller entities that at the moment just don't have that provision, or it's extremely costly provision. You know, we need to be able to give good, considered advice about how we engage with each other in the creative industries that can really support a healthier workplace culture.
Yeah. I was also, you and Andy, when we were your colleague Andy, who's not on the podcast, but not because he's not wonderful and an ally, but we just have a really good, strong team. But we were talking about restorative justice as well, which I think is that's an interesting. And really, I'm really interested in that as a concept, and I think it comes up in our persistent nasty conversations a lot. But sometimes that you find restorative justice existing in grassroots communities and grassroots organisations more than in an official capacity. Yeah. I was just wondering if you could speak to that a little bit.
Yes, it's certainly within our line of sight. We've asked Dr. Kienda Hoji, who's a really senior leader in the music sector, to lead CISA's work in terms of, you know, thinking about elements like restorative justice, how that fits in terms of our commitment to anti-discrimination particularly as well. So I think there'll be a range of interventions. We're always looking for proportionate accountability. We're not an organisation that seeks to blacklist people. We are there to think about the most appropriate intervention. It may be legal. There may be criminal issues that we need to hand over with the consent of the people that come to us. We know that those are options. But equally, we just want to create a consistent place where you can start to turn the tide. So nobody could say, I didn't know. Nobody could say, I didn't understand that my behaviour was offensive in that way. You know, that you create that place where you're raising cultural norms of behaviour, where you're raising education of how we all support each other. And what was really interesting, what was striking, we did a survey recently with our consultants at PA Consulting. 91% of the 800 respondents we did in a snap survey across the creative industries wanted CISA. 84% of them said that they would use our services, but a significant proportion of them were under 35. So, you know, the workplace expectation of how we engage with one another is changing, and there's a real opportunity for us to get ahead of that. You know, CISA is about preventative investment rather than reactive cost, and being really thoughtful and mindful about what the most appropriate intervention would be. And we want restorative justice to be part of that dialogue going forward.
I mean,
it's like, it's so refreshing, I think, to hear. And I'm sure everybody that's listening will be like, oh my God, I've been waiting for someone to be saying this for so long. And people will have numerous experiences having worked, no matter what your role is within the creative industries, having worked in it for even just a short amount of time, you will have hopefully not experienced anything yourself, but you might have certainly heard of these stories. I think there's also something that we had kind of chatted about earlier about making sure that people are aware that this isn't about cancel culture.
No, this is about becoming in that void where you get cancel culture on one hand, or you get no accountability and consequences on the other. Somewhere in the middle of that is CISA, fairness, justice, due process, an appropriate reporting mechanism, proportional accountability. You know, that's the void that we're seeking to address. As I said, you know, we're not a shaming organisation. We're not there to blacklist. We're there to uphold and improve standards of behaviour across the creative industries. there are various mechanisms by which we can do that in a voluntary regulatory framework, you know, and that's what we're building now. But we have the opportunity to own it, to craft it, to listen. You know, that's really now fundamental, listening to people's individual experiences, listening to how we shape the services with my wonderful colleague, Andy, who has 20 years experience of doing complex investigations, mediation, dispute resolution, reporting, etc., for the Parliamentary and Health Ombudsman. So dealing with really significant, serious cases, bringing all of that experience now to the creative industry so we can tailor what CESA is, that we are meeting needs, that we are managing expectations. We won't be able to investigate everything. It's really important to say that. But we will use our resources judiciously so that we can always meet our aims of making the workplace safer for everybody and preventing harm.
And I think that's the one thing that lots of people will probably come back on that one, right? About how are things going to be investigated?
Yeah.
And I think it would be great because you kind of talked about your conversations with 80 of the big organisations and how you're going to be funded and that sense of how independent you can be.
Yeah, so that's a really important point to address, and forgive me because I told you I'm a regulation bore, so you know there's a technical underbelly for this, but please bear with me. So if you'll see on our website, if you go there, that we can investigate without fear or favour. The reason that we can live to that value is that there are two companies. So CESA has a CESA finance board, so we genuinely do not know who funds us. So we're about to go in and gather in the money and we won't know who funds us. Then there's the operational arm of CESA, where Andy and I will work with our colleagues, and the CESA finance board transfers a collective sum of money to CESA to deliver its activities. So there can be no sense that, oh, well, you're not going to look at them because they gave you this amount of money, because we genuinely won't know. That is governed at the highest level. We're just about to recruit to our CESA finance board. CESA will have its own board. And to ensure, again, our independence, the people that will be drawing down to govern us will not be actively engaged in the creative industry. So there won't be that conflict of interest there. So forgive me for the technical rigor, but it's really important that you know that we can live to our values on being genuinely independent and being able to investigate without fear or favour. So that is modelled on the Advertising Standards Authority and how they work, and it's worked well for them for 40 years. You know, I asked Guy Parker, the chief exec there, do you know who funds you? And he said, I genuinely don't, and I never have done, and I never will do, you know? Yeah. So we can't stop people saying, we think CESA's great and we support it. Some corporate organisations and bodies in the creative industries will do that. That's great, you know, but we genuinely won't know where our money comes from.
And I think that's really important for everybody to hear, because I think in our industry, especially as freelancers, a lot of your worries come from a place of fear of never being employed again if you rock the boat, and our careers are so precarious as it is. So I think it's really important that everybody understands that this is, when you say independent, it truly means that it's independent.
It's truly independent. But again, in order to be truly independent and to have, you know, the legitimacy to do this work, industry needs to fund us and support us in doing this work. So we don't receive any money from government. So we're not a statutory regulator, but this is a model that's replicated in other areas. So the BBFC, for example, that does age classifications on film, voluntary regulation, the Civil Aviation Authority, voluntary regulation, the fundraising regulator, voluntary regulation. So this is normalised in terms of that you don't always have government money to bring accountability and a set of rules to really significant sectors in the UK. But I think we are driven by ensuring that we always are reinforcing that we're a safe, confidential service and people can report issues that they've witnessed that might not have happened to them, and people can report on behalf of themselves, and people can report anonymously. Obviously, if you report anonymously, that limits in some cases what potential outcomes and advice we could give you. But those are really baked into our DNA, that this is a safe, confidential service and people will individually choose in terms of how they engage with us.
I think that's super important. I think just to go back to a moment in your history and what sort of galvanised you towards this work, I think, you know, I'm going to name the big elephant in the room, the big horrible white teeny elephant in the room, because we had, you know, he's back mm-hmm. in the news.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm just curious about, I think we all had, there was such a moment when the initial Weinstein allegations broke. And this question is actually more about, it's directed at you, Jen, as a person, as a woman, because I think we all, there was ripples of recognition and relief just cascaded over the industry and the sector. And, you know, you touched on this idea of like people saying, oh, I didn't know my behaviour but was bad, or I didn't know I was misbehaving. And, you know, when the Weinstein stuff broke, it was half like people claiming they never knew, and then a huge moment of like, oh, we knew. We were just too.
Yeah.
Just too afraid to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, this is why in having that safe, confidential, independent place, that unique single place of accountability. So if you take issues like that, you know, people might know, but they still don't know where necessarily that single place where they report to, or the fear of victimization, you know, the use, misuse of NDAs. One of my closest allies in this work is Zelda Perkins, who people will know, who is one of the founders of Cannot Buy My Silence, who broke her NDA. And, you know, the whole issue around Weinstein then exploded, and, you know, her determination in terms of changing the law and in terms of ensuring that people aren't silenced by the misuse of NDAs is really central to how CISA will operate as well. So we are in that dialogue with the Women and Equality Select Committee, and also we'll speak to government. One of the aspirations for CISA is that we become a prescribed person in the relevant legislation. So if you've signed an NDA, you can still speak to us and raise your concerns. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, it's a big issue where we can also report. So one of the things that CISA will do is report, you know, have you been asked to sign an NDA, or people want to tell us that they've been signed to sign an NDA in relation to these issues, and also the fear of victimization. And what Zelda did is turn the floodlights on that issue. And I think that's what CISA can help amplify, turn the floodlights on the scale of fear of victimization and the scale of misuse of non-disclosure agreements. And by reporting on that in an aggregated way, you start to kind of turn the tide, you start to flush it out. So these are devices that are used, you know, but you start to flush it out and you start to report on the frequency. And one of the common denominators, unfortunately, across each of the creative industries that we're working in, that fear of victimization is a real barrier for people to reporting. And that's why it's so important that CISA is able to emphasize its independence.
Yeah, you said something really powerful when we were chatting earlier. It just stuck with me, this idea of the NDA not being worth the paper it's printed on, because, you know, you hear NDA now for me. Yeah. I hear NDA and I hear that my associations in my brain go, oh, there's something dodgy in there they don't want out. It doesn't automatically translate to, oh, they're keeping us safe, or it's just marketing issues. It's like, no, there's something going on they don't want the world to know, because of NDAs being associated now with power, abuse of power dynamics.
Yeah. I think that's where Zelda's really shone a light, where they're misused, you know. And I think we'll continue to, if you read our response on our website to the Women and Equality Select Committee report, you'll see quite a detailed response from CISA in reaction to the recommendations that report made. And we're in that dialogue. We continue that dialogue to get the relative legislative change that we want to see in that regard. We'll continue talking.
So we're kind of chatting to you kind of at the beginning of CISA, right? And obviously your aim is to launch fully December of this year.
We're gonna, you know, grow over time. So we know CISA is urgent. We know that CISA is much needed. But one of the things that I think will give your listeners confidence is that we do our due diligence very carefully. We take a significant amount of legal advice, and particularly around, you know, the potential defamation claim or GDPR and how we handle data. So we're really, really considered about how we move forward. So just in terms of managing pace and expectation, yes, we'll go open at the end of the year, contingent on our funding ask, with a number of services, getting advice, having the reporting in place are the most likely services that we will be providing. Having our standards framework established and all the consultation that is required to go with that, starting to build in the codes of practice. So there's a kind of stepping stone approach. But I think, you know, I see the potential over 3 to 5 years for CISA just to grow in terms of our capability and our standing. By virtue of our existence, we will have a deterrent value. You know, so we start to be able to measure our impact. How many mediations? How many dispute resolutions? What's the reporting like on these really serious issues of victimization NDAs? You know, start to aggregate that data, because one of the things about the creative industries is, you know, you could be a serial perpetrator of harm and hide in the cul-de-sacs moving through film, TV, theatre. We're like a shoal of fish. Mm-hmm. We move around, you know. That's really hard to establish accountability in that scenario. Mm-hmm. So that's what we bring. But we always work at what I describe as a judicious pace, so that we manage expectations, that we won't be doing investigations straight away. You know, we'll build up our capability, and there's a lot of listening and engagement to do, but we know CISA's urgent. We're on our way. We're asking for the money from the cultural institutions imminently, and those initial set of services will lead us to be, I hope, a significant positive force for the sector forevermore. And some of the other work that we're doing, you know, in the sectors that we anticipate coming in, fashion, games, publishing, etc., in the future, you know, is looking at roles and responsibilities when you have a senior position like a talent agent, you know, working with Spotlight and others about, well, what does that mean? What does that look like? How do we support a framework for intimacy coordinators, for example, access coordinators? How does CISA help professionalize the elements of the creative industries that actually, I think, will really enhance creativity, enhance productivity? Because we're losing people.
Yeah.
You know, we're losing amazing people, and, you know, that cannot stand. Mm. And this point that we revisited about expectations of our workplace has changed. You know, people aren't going to wear it. If you're not supporting that 91% of people that want CISA, you kind of going against market forces, you know. So I consider us to be an inevitable necessity. You know, we're on the march. We know that people want us. We know that we're needed. We're filling that void. But we'll always be careful to manage pace and expectation. But we are coming. And I think we have a really, really valuable role to play.
Yeah, you are coming over the hill like a valkyrie.
Yeah. I think the other thing that I kind of just want to kind of mention is that some people might go, well, why do we need CISA? We have unions, etc. And I think it's really important that we're really clear on what our unions can do and what CISA can do.
Yeah.
And I think it's how vital it is that we work together.
Yeah.
Because we can't all be in separate pockets doing bits, because we're either then just repeating work or we're not actually getting to the work.
100%. And we've set that out really clearly, that CISA does not duplicate, but we address a void in provision. You know, it's a basic logic model. We know there's an issue. We know there's a gap in provision. CISA will fill that gap. Where it's not us, we'll be, you know, there'll be a kind of tube map of relationships behind the front door of CISA. And we're so well supported. We're engaged in talking with
the Glasgow tube map. It's just a literal circle.
Nice. Yeah, we'll take it. But, you know, where there is existing provision from the unions, you know, we'll refer that accordingly. There's potential for us to have a memorandum of understanding, so everybody gets where they sit. You know, industrial relations, definitely union issue. You know, help musicians and a film and TV charity provide counselling. Mm. You know, CISA won't do that, because we know that that provision is there, and we'll be referring to our friends, you know, in all of those organisations. But I know from my conversations, particularly with BEC2, you know, how supportive they've been, how much they want this to happen, their hand in glove in terms of how we move forward in doing this work. So it's a really collegiate endeavor, and that's what has been a real privilege for me. I've met so many amazing people. You know, I am constantly thinking about the stories that I've heard and the people that have come to me with their experiences, and that's what we do now. We honor that and we get this done.
Yeah, that feels very relatable from a persistent and nasty perspective, because we've encountered so much of that since we began. And it kind of, we set up as a podcast and a script reading and, you know, something to just amplify the work of women in theatre and film. And it just
became an advocacy
initiative sort of by accident, which we feel very privileged that people have come to us and treat us with trust. And similarly, we want to honour that. But there's something about the relief that I felt when I heard about CISA and connected with you, Jen, because so often we just get our inbox or our DMs, people just tell us stuff. And yeah. We know you can't deal with it.
Yeah.
But we just knowing there was a place where we could say it, we could vocalise it and be heard was enough for them in the moment to just heal a little bit. So knowing that this is coming is... I'm getting slightly emotional. It's a wonderful thing. So thank you. Just, I know we're not finished our conversation just yet, but I just want to say at this juncture, thank you for the work that you have done and your passion and commitment.
Thank you for your work. You know, it's a real privilege to be here and talk to you, and this relationship will continue to grow in depth, and, you know, we will be there for you as a resource. And I just feel that, you know, it's conversations like ours that we had, you know, were really instructive to how CESA develops. You know, we know there's this huge gap, and people want a place to go where they can speak to their lived experience, and it's not clear often where that is. Or, you know, there's a real fear of victimization if you do. So I think we'll continue to work together again with whichever variation of the tube mat we decide, but you know, our relationship is really pivotal, and it's really important to us that your listeners know that we're here for them.
Some boys just went to interrupt our podcast, and I don't know if you heard the door opening. But it's okay, I just put my hand up and they went and turned away.
Always take your energy out.
Real authority.
I know.
They were just gone in a heartbeat. Yeah.
Jen, before we finish up, we like to ask our guests a question. Part of Persistent and Nasty came from two cultural moments. Nevertheless, you persisted. Both happened to be American.
No, actually, that wasn't intentional. It was just in the media at the moment we formed.
Elizabeth Warren, and then the Twitter storm that was when the previous president of the United States called Hillary Clinton a nasty woman for daring to give him facts. So then there was the hashtag nasty woman. But also it's about a kind of reclamation of words for us.
Yeah.
And words in particular that are used against women from a very young age throughout their life to make us behave. So we like to ask our guests, what does the phrase persistent and nasty mean to you?
Oh, wow. I just want to give you the best answer I can, but I feel like I need to think about this more deeply. But I think, you know, that whole ethos of reclamation, that whole kind of controlling narrative, it's such an important and powerful thing to do in the inclusivity space, you know, so I really welcome it. And I just feel quite proud to be part of the persistent and nasty gang, actually. You know,
actually in the club.
It's really important work that you're doing. And I think, you know, one of the things that is so galvanizing is the good energy and the goodwill that has come behind CESA. We have been built on 1,000 acts of kindness. You know, the lawyers that give their pro bono support, our consultants that are so excited to build this new regulatory body, PA Consulting, all of the people that have trusted us with their experiences, all of the cultural institutions that have said yes before we've even got three slides in, you know, it's just like, we're going to do this. This is a real moment for collective courage and dynamic leadership. We have to be the generation that is the circuit breaker. We have to be. It's now.
Oh my God, that's so inspirational.
It is now. I'm going to make sure and link everything for CESA in the show notes of today's episode. I just want to say thank you so much for everything that you're doing. And Louise and I feel
very privileged to talk to you. Thank you for your time. Thank you for, I know you're super busy and you're meeting so many people and you're going all over the UK to do that. So giving us some of your time to chat today was really meaningful and really grateful.
It's a real privilege and I can't wait to come back and see you soon.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Jen, thank you so much. And until next time, lovely listeners,
stay nasty.